Lewis escorted Emma to her designated Paragon's apartment. It was a roomy enough place for one person, in a nice enough neighborhood. On the way there, Emma arrested 3 muggers, 7 pickpockets, and 1 flasher, who was very lucky not to be shot somewhere extremely unfortunate when Emma thought he was opening his coat to show her his gun. Lewis decided he wasn't going to hang around while she familiarized herself with her new neighborhood. He didn't think his nerves would stand it. No, a nice, quiet, solitary walk was just what he needed. He had a lot of thinking to do about his various problems. And he thought a lot better when his pulse rate didn't keep going through the roof every 10 minutes. So he bade Emma a polite farewell, endured another hug, gave her his private comm number, just in case she needed him in an emergency, and then left as quickly as was still courteous. He strolled down the pleasant tree-lined boulevard, frowning just heavily enough that the passersby left him strictly alone, and gave some serious thought to what his life had become. He liked to think that he'd done good work in his time as a Paragon, that he'd made a real difference. But it seemed that that was behind him now. His visit to the Sangreal had made it painfully clear that his days as a Paragon were over. He was the champion now, and it was up to him to decide what that was going to mean. He was damned if he was going to be nothing more than Douglas's bodyguard, honorable a position though that might be. Just standing around, twiddling his thumbs, waiting for something to happen? That wasn't him. He needed to be busy, to be doing things, useful things. He needed who and what he was to matter. He was so taken up with his own thoughts that he didn't notice as the boulevard slowly emptied of other people until he was walking all alone. He didn't notice how quiet it had gotten, or that the surveillance cameras were slowly turning themselves off one by one. He was honestly surprised when a blood-red devil appeared suddenly out of an alleyway before him and moved quickly forward to block his path. Lewis stopped short, blinked a few times, and studied the sight before him. This particular devil was clearly the result of really first-class transformation work from a major league body shop. Goat's horns curled up from a heavy, lowering brow, the thin-lipped mouth was crammed full of pointed teeth, and the bent satyr's legs ended in cloven hoofs. The kind of full-body work that cost serious credits. And the disruptor the devil was pointing directly at Lewis's head was also very much top of the line. Lewis felt like he should applaud, but he really wasn't in the mood.
Hellfire Club, right? Nice horns. Go away. I'm busy.
The devil blinked resentfully, suddenly uncertain, and lowered his gun a little.
What?
I said go away. I really don't have time for this right now. Go mug a tourist or something. Give them a nice story to tell when they get back home.
Shut up!
The devil extended his hairy crimson arm to point the barrel of his gun right between Lewis's eyes.
The Hellfire Club has mocked you for death, Lewis Deathstalker!
Just looking at the devil, Lewis could see half a dozen ways to disarm him without putting himself at risk, but he just didn't have the energy. He was composing a really crushing remark when a second figure suddenly erupted from the alleyway, wearing the black domino mask of a Shadow Court assassin, also pointing an energy gun at Lewis.
Say your prayers, King's Champion. The Shadow Court has sentenced you to... Wait a minute. Get the hell away from him, you creepy little hellfire amateur! The Deathstalker is mine!
The hell he is!
The devil brought his gun quickly around to cover the assassin.
I got here first! Piss off!
You piss off, you dilettante! The Shadow Court outranks whatever claim you bunch of degenerates might have on the Deathstalker. So scuttle off, back to your body shop, and see if you can still get a refund. And let a real professional deal with this.
Excuse me.
I got here first. I'm going to shoot him.
I'll shoot you first. The credit for this kill is mine. Let all beware the vengeance of the aristocrats.
Bunch of pansies. Living on past glories. Bemoaning the good old days when you could still have sex with your cousin without people sniggering at you. You wouldn't have the guts to do the kind of things we do every day just for kicks.
Oh, yeah? Like what? What do you weirdos do that's so damn special? Steal the lead off church roofs and then urinate through the holes?
At least we don't marry our brothers and sisters. And look at those ears of yours. You don't get ears like that without centuries of inbreeding in a gene pool so shallow you couldn't even go wading in it. If they were any longer, you could use them to fly.
You bastard. You utter bastard!
Oh, look, now he's gonna cry.
I'm not gonna cry!
Excuse me.
Shut up! You get out of here right now, or...
Or what? You'll stamp your little footy?
Oh, that's
oh,
it.
Oh, I'm dead scared, I am.
You are dead.
And that was when the third figure suddenly appeared, swooping down out of the empty sky on a gravity sled with no markings. He wore a long, concealing black cloak with a hood pulled well forward to hide his face. He pulled the sled right up beside the group, and then had to stop and pull his hood back a bit so he could see what he was doing, before he could level his energy gun at Lewis.
Kneel and beg for mercy, Deathstalker! Your life is forfeit for interfering in the manifest destiny of pure humanity! The Neumann...
Piss off! I don't believe this! What is this, Abbotonite? I am here to kill Lewis Deathstalker, and when the Shadow Court marks someone for death, they are bloody well dead! Now go and find your own hero to
we
kill!
We marked him for death first!
I think you'll find pure humanity has the prior claim.
The Neumann climbed awkwardly down from his gravity sled. He tripped over his long cloak and almost fell...
Listen, you two!
Whoa. Careful!
...till Lewis grabbed him by the arm to steady him.
You all right?
Yes, fine, thank you. Listen, you two! The Deathstalker killed our suicide bomber at court. That makes him our target. You must have seen it. It was on all the news channels.
Oh, we all saw it. Complete bloody balls up from beginning to end. You don't stand around making speeches when you've come to kill someone. If he had just shut up and done his job, he might have pulled it off. But oh no, he had to justify himself with all the usual propaganda claptrap.
Statements of intent are important. What's the point of a terrorist atrocity if no one knows why you did it? There are so many fringe groups and Looney Tunes out there these days. It's vital to make it clear to the media whose cause you're representing. Or you can bet a dozen other groups will have claimed responsibility before you can even get a press statement out.
Typical terrorist. All mouth and dogma, no follow-up. If you're going to kill someone, just kill him. Murder is a philosophical art, not a political one.
Oh yes, you devils are really philosophical. Getting your kicks by breaking into churches and playing with yourselves in front of the altar. Thinking you're so daring and evil because you can recite the Lord's Prayer backwards. Get a tape recorder. You don't have an agenda. You don't even have a manifesto. Probably couldn't even spell dialectic. No real aims except to outrage mommy and daddy. I put it all down to late potty training myself.
You take that back.
The devil trained his gun on the Neumann. And that was when the elf teleported in. A tall, gangling girl dressed in tattered silks with wild tribal tattoos on her face, appearing right next to the group in an impressive cloud of sulfurous smoke.
We of the true Asper race have come to exact our vengeance.
Shut up!
What the hell is this, a costume party
Wonderful.
For morons?
Lewis walked away and left them to argue with each other. None of them noticed. Lewis had almost reached the end of the street before they started shooting at each other. He didn't look back. Back at Parliament House, Lewis searched out King Douglas and discovered he'd come back just in time to stand around and do nothing. Essentially, he got to follow Douglas as he strode rapidly through the endless warren of narrow corridors, plunging into one anonymous back room after another, where the king chaired meetings, oversaw important discussions, brought disparate sides together, and generally struggled to establish his own political base by storing up favors for the future. Lewis was pointedly barred from these meetings on the grounds that no one cared what he had to say, and besides, political deal-making went best with the absolute minimum of witnesses. So, Lewis did a lot of standing around outside closed and locked doors, looking hopefully about him for more assassins to show up to relieve the monotony. To his credit, he lasted almost 2 hours before his patience snapped.
All right!
He kicked in the door he'd been guarding, and stormed into the chamber with drawn sword and gun.
That's it! I demand you give me something useful to do before I go out of my mind from sheer boredom and start to use politicos for target practice!
The king studied his champion's flushed face and decided Lewis might just mean it.
Gentlemen, if you'll excuse me?
Yes, of course, Your Majesty!
Most of the top-ranked civil servants Douglas had been negotiating with were now hiding under the conference table. Douglas hustled Lewis back outside into the corridor.
All right. You want something useful to do, I'll oblige you. Jess has just sent word that she has some important shopping to take care of in town. I think we'll all feel a lot happier if she had someone guarding her who could be depended on. House Security promised they'd provide someone, but after that Neumann bomber yesterday, I wouldn't trust them to guard an empty room. You watch over her, Lewis. I'll be fine here.
Let me see if I've got this right. You want me to take Jessamine shopping?
Yes. Try and get her back in time for tea.
Douglas.
Lewis, I am your king. This is not a request.
Really? I thought you were my friend.
I am, Lewis. Really. But I have other responsibilities now. Look after Jessamine. There are still a lot of death threats coming in, aimed specifically at her. I need to know she's safe. Who else can I depend on like you?
It's gonna be one of those days. I can just tell. But Douglas, when I get back, we're gonna have a serious talk.
Looking forward to it immensely, Lewis.
You never could lie to me worth a damn, Douglas.
Lewis turned his back on his king and stalked off down the corridor. He could feel Douglas's gaze on his back. Truth be told, once Lewis had had time to think about it, he wasn't actually all that upset by his new assignment. Spending the afternoon in Jessamine Flowers' company had to be more fun than standing around in corridors. And Anne had already told him about the continuing death threats. Apparently, most of them came from Jessamine's more extreme fans, outraged that she was giving up her career and turning her back on her admirers to marry the king. If they couldn't have her, no one could. She really did need a bodyguard who knew what he was doing. Lewis had only acted up because he didn't want Douglas to think he was getting soft. Lewis Deathstalker had stewarded Pure Humanity demonstrations and stood firm against frenzied arena fans determined to storm the box office for the last few season tickets and faced down all kinds of angry crowds in his time. But he'd never seen anything like the madness that engulfed Jessamine Flowers wherever she went. Her local fans had turned out in force, lying in wait outside her hotel, and every shop Jessamine visited was immediately surrounded by a clumsy, screaming mob. They demanded her smile, her wave, her autograph, her attention, as though they were only real if she deigned to recognize their existence. For Jessamine Flowers, this was business as usual, and she took it all in her stride. She was surrounded at all times by a small crowd of her own people, experienced in keeping the fans at bay without pissing them off. They formed a living wall and barrier around her. From the moment she and Lewis left the recording company's limousine until she was safely inside the store. But even so, Lewis stuck close to her at all times and never let his hand move far from his gun. The almost animal nature of the crowds fascinated him. He was used to being admired, even adored. All Paragons were. It came with the job. But Paragon fans were usually satisfied to worship their heroes from afar. They knew better than to crowd people who tended to react to surprises with drawn weapons. There were groupies, of course, but Lewis had never encouraged them. He didn't trust their motives, and besides, they embarrassed him. Jessamine's fans were a whole different breed. There seemed no end to their numbers, and Lewis found their endless din, frankly, unnerving. Just the sight of Jessamine in person was apparently enough to drive them right out of their minds. The mob kept surging forward against the tangle fields the big stores had set up once they heard Jessamine plan to grace them with their presence, and more than once, Lewis saw men and women fainting from the excitement and the sheer crush of bodies. Medics moved slowly through the crowd to retrieve the fallen, sometimes having to actually fight their way past fans, reluctant to give up their places.
Hello, my darlings. Good to see you all.
Jessamine would wave and smile to the fans on her way from the limousine to the store, and then ignored them completely, concentrating on her shopping with a single-minded thoroughness Lewis could only admire. She actually didn't seem to hear the howling of the mob outside. Lewis supposed you could get used to anything in time. Through the store windows, Lewis could see paparazzi using their personal force shields to bludgeon their way to the very front of the crowds, and then sent their cameras zooming through the air outside the store's windows, trying to get a peep of what Jessamine was buying this week. Cheap gossip shows lived for that kind of trivia. Lewis ignored them, concentrating on the fans, and didn't let himself relax for a moment. He didn't trust the crowd with their strangely blank eyes and desperate body language. There were undercurrents of anger, even rage, in some of the voices, expressed here and there on hastily lettered placards raised above the heads of the crowd, and shaken with some passion. Come back to us, they said. Don't leave us, we made you what you are. By turning her back on her career, she was turning her back on them, saying she didn't need them anymore, that they didn't matter. And that, of course, was unacceptable. What Jessamine might want or need didn't seem to be important to them. Stars existed for their fans, not the other way around. Everyone knew that. The really big stores had their own private force shield generators, polarized windows, and armed security staff. And customers had to pass through all kinds of sensor equipment just to get in.
Sorry about that.
That's quite all right, Sir Deathstalker.
Lewis set off practically every alarm they had, but everyone made allowances. Not because he was the new Imperial Champion, but because he was with Jessamine Flowers. Lewis found their level of paranoia encouraging, and it actually started to relax a little.
God, oh my God, Miss Flowers! Miss Flowers!
When a shop assistant suddenly ran forward out of nowhere with an autograph pad in his hand that for one heart-stopping moment looked very like a bomb. Only Lewis knew how close the poor fool came to getting shot.
Oh, would you mind terribly?
Not at all.
Oh, thank you. I'll make it out to, oh my God, I can't even remember my own name. I'm so excited. I'm Sam. Oh, thank you. I have all your holovids.
Jessamine smiled graciously at the beaming assistant, while Lewis quietly fought to get his breathing back under control. If Jessamine noticed, she never said anything. But after that, she went out of her way to keep Lewis close to her and require his advice on what she was buying. And she bought a hell of a lot. Lewis was at first impressed and then actually staggered by the sheer amount she was accumulating. She would stride down the aisles, pointing here and there with an imperious finger.
Oh, an excellent choice, Miss Flowers.
Not even bothering to look at the price tags. The really good stuff didn't have price tags, of course. If you had to ask, you couldn't afford it. She ordered dresses by the dozen, shoes and gloves and hats by the hundred, or so it seemed, and any amount of jewelry and gold and silver bangles, many of which were actual works of art, and any one of which cost more than Lewis's annual salary. He was beginning to wonder if he could even afford to breathe the store's rarefied and subtly perfumed air. Jessamine tried to order things for Lewis, too, when she saw something she thought would suit him, and was honestly surprised when he kept turning her down.
I'm allowed to buy you things, darling. You're my fiancé's best friend and my champion as well as his. And you saved my life in court yesterday. Honestly, sweetie, it was the bravest thing I've ever seen. Why won't you let me buy you just a little something or two to show my appreciation?
Gold and jewelry are not little somethings. Not where I'm concerned. And those fashionable items you keep pressing on me would be wasted on me anyway. I have no sense of style. Everyone knows that. Anytime I wear something good at court, I look like I hired it. And I'm really not comfortable having you spend so much money on me.
This is nothing, darling. I am rich, Lewis. Richer than you could possibly imagine. Empire-wide royalties will do that to you. Every year my accountants have to invent whole new fields of mathematics just to keep track of it all. I could buy this whole store out of petty cash. And I just might if that assistant manager doesn't stop trying to peer down my cleavage. Oh, please let me buy you something, Lewis. This is small change to me, darling. Really it is.
It isn't to me.
Jessamine looked at him sharply, picking up some of the undertones in his voice. She studied his scowling face for a long moment, and then gestured sharply for everyone else to fall back and give the two of them some privacy.
Of course, Miss Flowers.
The store staff practically fell over themselves, backing away at speed, and even Jessamine's own people found something in entirely different aisles to suddenly be interested in. Jessamine fixed Lewis with a steely gaze.
Talk to me, Lewis. There's something you're not telling me, something I don't know, and I hate not knowing things. What's the problem here? The real problem.
Lewis did his best to be evasive for his pride's sake, but Jessamine backed him up against the nearest counter and interrogated him mercilessly, until finally he just gave up and explained his current financial situation. Jessamine was honestly shocked, and it only took her a moment to go from blank disbelief to white-hot fury.
I'm not having my champion treated like this! It's an insult, an outrage! Parliament will pay you every penny you're worth, or I will have Douglas...
No, you won't. Douglas has his own problems in Parliament at the moment. He doesn't need me muddy in the waters. There are those who'd use my
ambivalent position as a weapon with which to attack or undermine Douglas's position, and I won't have that. I won't be used to hurt my friend. This is my problem. I'll sort it out.
Well then, why don't I advance you some money against your future improved earnings, just to tide you over?
I don't think so. I don't think that would be proper. It might be misunderstood.
Men! Not a practical bone in their whole bodies, any of them. I've never been proper in my entire life, and I enjoyed every minute of it. So, I can't give you presents, I can't loan you money. Can I at least take you to the nearest decent tea rooms and buy you a nice cup of something hot and refreshing? I don't know about you, but I'm absolutely dying of thirst, darling.
Well, a cup of tea would be very nice right now.
Good! That's settled then. If you're very good, I might even spring for milk and sugar as well.
Nothing but the very best of tea rooms for Jessamine Flowers, of course. The Earl Grey tea rooms opened up specially early just for her, so that she and Lewis could have the place all to themselves. She had all her own people stay outside, ostensibly to make sure the place was secure, but really just so she and Lewis could have some quiet time together. She marched into the main dining area as though she owned the place, or was planning to, tossed her hideously expensive fur coat in the general direction of the flustered cloakroom attendant, and headed unerringly for the very best table in the room. Waitresses in old-fashioned formal uniforms hurried forward to pull out chairs for her and Lewis, and then bustled back and forth from the kitchens with all the makings necessary for a civilized early evening tea. The tea service itself was genuine antique silver, and all kinds of crumpets and pastries and finger foods were presented for Jessamine's approval. She nodded yes to everything, and then gestured brusquely for the staff to make themselves scarce.
Of course, Miss Flowers. Yes,
whatever you say, Miss Flowers.
Well, right over here, Miss Flowers.
They backed hastily away, bowing and scraping as they went. Lewis studied Jessamine thoughtfully. Anyone who thought the aristocracy was a thing of the past had never spent any time in the presence of a real star. He looked around the tea room, just a little uneasily. In its own subtle way, it was actually grander than the court. Normally, even a paragon wouldn't be able to count on getting into a place like this without a reservation. And even if he did, he probably wouldn't have been able to afford the rental on the cup the tea came in. In fact, the china cup before Lewis looked so delicate, he was almost afraid to pick it up. He was just glad he'd recognized what the finger bowl was in time. As always, Jessamine was completely at home, and busied herself pouring the tea.
Shall I be mother? Oh, darling, you must try these. They're the next best thing to sexual ecstasy.
She insisted Lewis try all the more unfamiliar finger food, and even fed him a piece or two with her own delicate fingers.
Yes. Very, tasty.
Which Lewis found acutely embarrassing.
You really must learn to live a little, darling. You're wound so tightly, I fear you're going to burst apart like a jack-in-a-box at any moment. I'd be delighted to help you embellish your tawdry wardrobe, you know. I have a superb fashion sense.
She chattered endlessly about this and that, none of it of any real importance, but all of it made entertaining by her constant caustic wit. Lewis didn't contribute much to the conversation. He was content to just sit and listen and watch Jessamine. She really was very beautiful. Some vid stars looked fine on the screen, but were disappointing in real life. In person, they seemed shorter or fatter, or their faces had unexpected flaws or blemishes that were usually removed by computer imaging before they ever hit the screens. Or perhaps they were just smaller, less glamorous in real life. Sitting right there in front of him, Jessamine was almost heart-stoppingly lovely. Not in any classical sense, but because her face was so full of character, alive with every emotion that passed over it. Up close, she radiated a sensuality and sexuality that was so casual it had to be natural, but was no less overwhelming for that. The few famous or glamorous people Lewis had met in the past had subtly intimidated him, though he would never have admitted it even to himself, but he felt completely at ease in Jessamine's company. He felt she liked him. He liked her. He admired her spirit, her confidence, her boundless energy. She was always so sharp and so sure, whatever the occasion. And when she smiled at him, it was like warming himself in the sun. He'd never met anyone like her. She was bright and charming and funny, her words all but falling over each other when she spoke, like the sound of a fast-moving stream, endlessly bubbling and sparkling. Her body was just magnificent. Lewis pulled his thoughts up sharply. This was his best friend's fiancée he was thinking about. The woman chosen to be the next queen of the Empire. A star, a diva, a legend in her own field. Well, he was just a bodyguard. Here to protect her from every threat, including perhaps himself.
I don't know that I've ever been in a place quite like this. Except on a case, of course.
Jessamine observed Lewis carefully, without being too obvious about it. He was clearly uncomfortable in such posh surroundings, but he seemed to be relaxing a little at last. She wanted him to be able to relax around her. He was always so formal and so courteous in her company, which was sweet, of course, but just a little irritating. There was nothing like being almost universally adored to make you value true friendship. When you're rich and famous and staggeringly beautiful, it's amazing how many people want to be your friend, and just a little disappointing how fast you learn to see through them to what they really want from you. Before this, Jessamine had only had one real friend, and that was Anne, who knew her when. And Douglas, of course. A fine man, Douglas. Perhaps even a great man. Her previous husbands didn't count, even the ones who were good in bed. No. Lewis liked her because he liked her. Liked her the person, not the star. She could tell. It was clear he had no idea how refreshing she found that. She liked him, too. She hadn't been sure at first. His reputation preceded him. The great and incorruptible paragon, the hero of Logris. Not as famous as Finn Durandal or so dashing as Douglas Campbell, but admired and respected by all. And, of course, he had that legendary name. She'd been quite nervous about meeting him. She only played legends. He was one. She'd expected to find some cold, humorless Puritan who slept at attention and never took his weapons off. Someone who wouldn't approve at all of a mere theatrical like her. Instead, Lewis Deathstalker turned out to be fun in his own quiet way. Not impressed by anyone or anything, and always ready with a murmured joke or a barbed comment. She liked it when he was around. Douglas relaxed more too when Lewis was there. Stopped taking himself and his role so seriously. The Deathstalker brought out his king's best qualities. All right, Lewis was ugly. It was a harsh face, even when he smiled, a face that could scare gargoyles. But he had kind eyes, and there was nothing like a career in show business to make you really tired of pretty faces. Jessamine would take character over looks any day. And she liked the way he moved. Lewis moved with confidence, like the trained warrior he was, like he always knew what he was doing, where he was going. You felt you could always depend on him to do the right thing. And he clearly had no idea how reassuring and how sexy that was. To meet the real thing after a lifetime of fakes and poseurs. Sometimes he'd smile at her or catch her eye with his, and she would feel her breath catch in her throat or her heart miss a beat. And then she would flash her practiced famous smile and talk a little faster to hide how she felt. Because even if she enjoyed these feelings, she knew how dangerous they were. She might like the Deathstalker, even admire him, but it could never be more than that. She was marrying Douglas Campbell. She was going to be queen. The culmination of her life, her career, her ambition. Everything she'd ever planned and worked for, everything she'd ever dreamed of. To be the most famous and fabulous woman in the Empire. And the most powerful, even if they didn't know it yet. Nothing could be allowed to threaten that. Not even her own treacherous feelings. Lewis and Jessamine talked about many things over their tea, none of them important. And not once did they ever say out loud what they were thinking. In all their eventful lives, they'd never met anyone like each other. Once, when they both reached for the same pastry, their hands touched, and just for a moment, they felt sparks fly. They'd pretty much finished their tea, and were unobtrusively searching for some excuse to prolong their time together, when Lewis suddenly realized that the noise outside the tea rooms had changed in character. All his old paragon instincts kicked in, and he looked away from Jessamine, away from her mouth and her eyes, almost against his wishes. The noise outside was louder, angrier, nastier. Lewis stood up suddenly.
What is it?
Jessamine took in the concern on his face, the sudden readiness for violence and battle in his body language. The calm and kind friend was gone, replaced by someone new, someone more frightening. For the first time, he looked like his legend. He looked like a Death Stalker. She stood up and looked where he was looking, out the great steel glass window overlooking the main street. Something new was happening outside, and it had nothing to do with Jessamine Flowers. Lewis moved over to stand by the window, one hand resting on the gun at his side. Jessamine moved quickly after him. The mob of her fans had dispersed, scattered now along the length of the pavements, and they were shouting and jeering at the almost military demonstration, marching down the middle of the street. They marched six abreast, blocking the road, their numbers stretching back almost out of sight. Their booted feet crashed down in perfect precision, and they held their signs and banners up like troop colors. Now and again, they chanted their brief and ugly slogans in cold, carrying voices, drowning out the shouted insults and disapproval from the spectators lining the street. The din reminded Lewis of feeding time at the arenas, when new imported killer aliens were introduced. You could almost taste the bloodlust on the air. He recognized the demonstrators' outfits immediately, the great white cross on the chest of the blood-red uniforms. The new image of the militant Church of Christ Transcendent. Ever since the church got tired of waiting patiently for change and decided to force the pace by getting into bed with pure humanity, their spokesmen were everywhere, on the news shows and chat shows and political discussion shows. Everyone was talking about this new, militant church. The church and the Neumann, a marriage made in hell. And God alone knew what their children might be like. There was a hell of a lot of them in the street, marching purposefully past the tea room window, and Lewis frowned as he took in how pitifully small the official security presence was. There were hardly any stewards, only a handful of peacekeepers, and not a paragon to be seen anywhere. Lewis's frown deepened into a scowl. All right, Emma Steele was probably still busy getting up to speed, and God knew where Finn Durandal was these days, but surely the authorities could have found someone to watch over the demonstration, even if they'd had to raid the Sangreal. Or perhaps the powers that be were afraid of upsetting the church. The militants had become surprisingly powerful, surprisingly quickly. Too big a security presence might provoke the very trouble the authorities were anxious to prevent. Still, if things were to get out of control... Lewis looked around for Jessamine's security people, and wasn't all that surprised to find they'd retreated into the tea room's foyer, away from possible danger. Their only interest was in protecting Jessamine. Lewis didn't blame them. They were professional enough to know when they were well out of their depth.
The church militant. Seen them on the news channels. Ugly people with an ugly message. Humans first, aliens nowhere. No fashion sense at all. And no sense of humor either, from what I've seen of their spokespeople. Funny how humor's always the first thing to go as you head towards the extremes of politics or religion and leave sanity behind.
And this is politics and religion. A deadly combination. The church has lost all sense of moderation or restraint since they adopted the Neumann philosophy. A human savior, a human empire, a human future. No others need apply. They're not the majority view yet, not by a long shot. But a lot of people are listening, and the opposition is fragmented. The best they can do is turn up at these demonstrations to shout abuse and throw things, which just inflames passions on both sides. We could be in for some real trouble here.
I still don't get why the church has turned against aliens all of a sudden.
I can explain it, but don't expect it to make sense. The church is all about transcendence, right? They've now decided that since only humans transcend through the madness maze, that proves aliens are automatically inferior beings, fit only to be guided, for which read ruled, by their natural superiors, humanity. For their own good, of course. Whenever people want to have power over others, it's always for their own good. Basically, the Neumann want to return to the good old days of empire, when aliens knew their place, as slaves or corpses. Their new partnership with the church gives the pure humanity cause a new patina of respectability. If the official church of the empire has accepted their beliefs, then there must be something to them. People who wouldn't listen before are listening now. And far too many are starting to believe.
But it was only a few weeks ago that they tried to murder the king with a transmutation bomb.
Oh, the church and the Neumann have disowned him. A lone nut, apparently. Poor bastard died for nothing. The cause has a new spokesman, though. The Angel of Madragudan.
I never liked him. Met him once at a charity do. He had sweaty hands and piggy little eyes, and kept looking at my breasts while he was talking to me. Talked a lot, but never really said much. I've met his sort before, out for what he can get, that one. But I never knew him to have any political ambitions or connections.
Well, he has now. In fact, he's bigger than ever now. You can't turn on the vids without him being there, saying awful, hateful things in that calm and reasonable voice of his. The trouble is, he's saying what a lot of people want to hear, that they're better than the aliens, and that they have a right to change things, by force, if necessary. The only thing more dangerous than an angry mob is an angry mob with an agenda. That isn't just a demonstration out there. They're headed somewhere. Somewhere specific. I think I'd better call in.
Jasmine shuddered.
Ooh, I hope there aren't any aliens out on the streets just now. If things do get out of hand...
They stood together, shoulder to shoulder before the steel glass window, watching the demonstration pass by. There seemed no end to it. Hundreds and hundreds of cold-faced men and women.
Oh, God, Lewis.
Jessamine shuddered again, and Lewis put his arm around her shoulders. And then he turned slowly to look at Jessamine, almost despite himself, and she turned to look at him.
Jess.
Their faces were very close now, and drawing closer every moment, until they could feel each other's breath on their lips and in their mouths. They looked into each other's eyes and could not look away, as the angry passions outside somehow fed the simple shared passion inside. Their eyes locked, saying everything they hadn't said while sitting at their table. In the end, it didn't matter who moved first. They pressed urgently against each other, holding each other fiercely as though someone might tear them apart. And they kissed with a lifetime's passion. When they finally broke apart, Lewis tried to say something and couldn't. He turned his head aside, and Jessamine tightened her grip on him. Lewis looked back at her, and their eyes locked again. They were both trembling.
Oh, we can't do this. We can't. It's wrong. Douglas is my friend.
Hell, he's my fiancé. I'm going to marry him.
Do you love him?
Yes. No. I don't know. It's complicated.
Not for me.
In the end, because she'd always been the practical one, Jessamine found the strength to let go first. She put her hands on Lewis's armored chest and pushed him back. And he stumbled a little, as though she'd hit him. But she couldn't have moved him unless he'd let her, and they both knew it. They were still staring into each other's eyes. Their hands trembled at their sides, as though desperate to reach out again.
I don't know what to do. I've never felt like this before.
Never? Haven't you ever been in love before?
No. There's only ever been me. And Douglas?
Hush.
Jessamine raised a hand to touch his mouth with her fingertips. Lewis turned his head away. He looked out across the tea room, and that was when he saw Anne Barkley standing there, watching him with Jessamine. And Lewis just knew, from the expression on her face, that she'd been watching for some time.
Anne, what are you doing here?
Jessamine looked around sharply and saw Anne, but apart from a slight widening of her eyes, her face betrayed nothing at all.
What am I doing here?
Anne advanced on the two of them, with the inevitability of destiny.
More to the point, what the hell are you two doing here? No, don't say it, Lewis. Whatever you were about to say, it would only have been a lie, and you never were any good at that. And I really don't have time or the patience to stand here and listen to you stutter. I came here looking for you. You're needed back at Parliament, both of you. Douglas has been called to an emergency session of the House, and is going to need all the support he can get. You may have noticed the commotion outside when you weren't busy eating each other's faces. Well, that march is just one of seven, all of them equally large, equally angry, and equally determined. They're all headed straight for the Parliament building, and absolutely no one thinks they're coming to hand in a petition. There's a really bad feeling in the air, Lewis. We've called in every peacekeeper in the city, but we can't afford a direct confrontation. The church has made it very clear it isn't going to be stopped or diverted. We even try to put up barricades, and they'll use that as an excuse to hit out with everything they've got. If we don't find just the right way to defuse this, it'll all end in tears. Guaranteed. Now get your asses moving, both of you. I've got a gravity barge waiting out the back.
Jessamine just nodded and headed for the cloakroom to fetch her fur coat. She passed straight by Anne, her head held high. She still hadn't said anything, and Lewis could only admire her grace under pressure. He could feel the flush reddening his face, and he didn't know what to do with his hands. Anne and he stood and stared at each other until Jessamine returned with her coat, having dismissed her security people. She headed for the rear of the tea rooms with a calm and composed face, as though she didn't have a care in the world. Anne glared at Lewis, and he almost flinched.
How could you? What the hell were you doing, Lewis? She's marrying Douglas in 2 weeks' time, your best friend. She will be queen to his king. You're going to ruin everything.
Do you think I don't know that? I don't know how it happened. It just happened. I know it was wrong, but it's not like she loves him. It's an arranged marriage, not much more than a business merger. And Jessamine's special. She matters to me. Damn it. Aren't I allowed anything for myself? I'm not a paragon anymore. I'm supposed to be the champion, but no one seems to know what that is. And ever since my best friend became king, he's had no time for me. I'm so alone, Anne. I never wanted to be champion. Never expected it. I only agreed because I thought Douglas needed me. And now, it seems like I've lost everything that ever mattered to me. Am I so wrong to want something for myself, Anne? She makes me happy. She cares for me.
Don't fool yourself, Lewis. She's an actress, remember? I've known her for years, and there was never a man she couldn't twist around her little finger. Much more likely, she was bored, and you were there. She's going to have to give up a lot to become queen, including a lot of freedom she's always taken for granted. You were just a last fling, a last gesture, one last taste of freedom before she has to give it all up and become respectable. I thought you were smarter than this, Lewis. Stronger than this. If even a hint of this were to get out, the gossip shows would have a field day. You know they would. And the king's enemies would use you to destroy him. Is that what you want?
Of course not. He's my friend.
Then act like it. And from now on, keep your mouth shut and your hands to yourself whenever you're around little Miss Hot to Trot. I may not be able to trust her, but I thought I could trust you.
You can. Lewis's face was calm now. Only someone who knew him really well could have seen the sadness in his eyes. Anne, who had known him since childhood, took him gently by the arm and guided him towards the rear of the tea rooms.
Come on, Lewis. There's work to be done, and we are needed. It's not the same as being wanted, but it'll have to do.
Again, you are watching this live. As protesters representing the church militant march on Parliament. This is only one of seven moving toward...
Over at Finn's charming apartment, the Durandal and his people were watching the Church Neumann demonstration on the oversized vidscreen that took up most of one wall. The colors were a bit overpowering, but the three dimensions and surround sound made it just like looking at a window. Finn didn't have much use for toys as a rule, but when he did decide he wanted something, he never settled for anything but the very best version available. He sat completely relaxed in his favorite chair, drinking a fashionable wine and smiling happily as his plans unfolded before him. Angelo Bellini sat in the chair next to him, intent and focused on the vidscreen, smiling now and again when he forgot himself. He had a drink in his hand, but was so caught up in the drama of the events he'd helped orchestrate, he kept forgetting the drink was there. Every now and again he would lean forward suddenly as he spotted a familiar face among the marchers.
Ah, that's a Philip Lawrence. And a Byron Mitchell.
Truth be told, the room really wasn't all that interested in the demonstrations. Angelo didn't notice, entirely wrapped up in himself and his own reactions. And every now and again, he would suddenly twitch or scratch himself in an exaggerated fashion, and never knew it wasn't by his own volition.
Wanker.
Brett Random sat slumped in a chair as far away from the others as he could get. He drank the best part of a bottle of brandy in the past hour, but it hadn't done a thing to improve his disposition. Brett was in a foul mood and didn't care who knew it. though he still had enough sense to keep quiet whenever Finn glanced his way. His stomach still hurt, but now he had a throbbing headache to go along with it. Thanks to the Esper drug, Brett had to spend a lot of his time tuning out the constant roar of all the minds thinking around him. It was slowly getting easier, and he had a feeling that eventually he'd be able to do it automatically. And somewhere, off in the distance, in a direction he couldn't identify, he could see or hear or feel something splendid. Something that shone like the sun. Something that felt like the home he'd never known. It was calling to him. He thought it might be the Oversoul. It scared the crap out of him. He'd started to experiment with his new abilities. He had already discovered that with a little concentration he could influence people around him, make them do things. Nothing major, nothing important, but he could make Angelo's face twitch and make him scratch an itch he didn't actually have. A cheap laugh, admittedly, but in Finn's service you had to make do with what you could get. It wasn't the most useful of talents, but it was a start, he supposed, and it pleased him to have an ability Finn knew nothing about. Never knew when you might need a weapon for the future. An ace in the hole. Brett smiled and drank his brandy. He'd tried out his new ability on Rose Constantine, but she immediately turned and looked right at him, so he didn't try that again. The last thing he wanted was to attract her attention. He was still trying to come to terms with that astonishing moment when their minds had briefly touched. Ever since, he'd felt differently about her, though he couldn't say how. Rose kept looking at him, and he couldn't read the expression on her face. It was a bit like waking up the next morning after a really good party and discovering a stranger in bed with you, so that there was now someone new in your life that you'd been close to, but really didn't know at all. She'd drawn up her chair right next to his, almost uncomfortably close, and she kept looking at him. For the moment, she was watching the events on the vid screen, because Finn had told her to, but Brett could tell she wasn't interested in any of it. He just knew that.
You did a good job, Angelo.
Finn smiled lazily.
Joining the church and the Neumann at the hip was one of my more inspired ideas, though I never dreamed they'd take to each other so completely and so quickly.
Oh, it was surprisingly easy. The right words in the right ears at the right level, suddenly people at the top on both sides become very receptive. Of course, it helped that both sides were frustrated with their lack of progress. Once I showed them what they could achieve if they joined the forces, they couldn't wait to get started. And of course, once word came down from on high, the lower orders were only too happy to go along. I've always been very good at pointing out to people where their best interests lie. And it's always been easier to get people to hate than to get them to love. Doesn't matter in the end whether it's religion or politics. People do so love to have a scapegoat. Someone to blame for all the troubles and failures of their little lives. Someone other than themselves, of course. And what could be more other than aliens? I should have thought it is years ago.
Things have taken a turn for the worse now, as Imperial security forces have apparently been directed to take more aggressive action. One can only wonder how long this will remain a non-violent demonstration.
And then Angelo broke off and leaned forward in his chair again, as trouble broke out on one of the marches, and all the media cameras zoomed in for close-ups. Security forces had apparently decided enough was enough, and had started setting up barriers to block off the road leading to Parliament. The marchers went crazy as they were forced to halt. There was shouting and screaming, the shaking of fists, and a lot of bad language. Angelo Bellini pursed his lips disapprovingly at the latter. These were supposed to be church-going people. The marchers pressed forward, pushing at the barriers and threatening the security people behind them. Already, some people were throwing things from within the safety of the crowd. The security forces backed away, looking nervously about them. They were vastly outnumbered and unsure what to do for the best. No one had seen a demonstration this large and this angry for years. But still, none of the security forces had drawn a gun or even a sword. Not yet. They'd all been given strict instructions not to start anything. But some of the stones and missiles flying through the air were coming dangerously close. And the barriers were flimsy things. They wouldn't stop the marchers if they were determined to break through, and both sides knew it. The marchers could see the House of Parliament now, and just the sight of that symbol of authority inflamed their passions even further. They were going to enter the House by force if necessary, and make the MPs listen to what they had to say. And a few peacekeepers and security people with frightened faces sure as hell weren't going to stop them.
How soon before it becomes a riot?
Brett was so fascinated by the drama unfolding before him that he actually forgot his stomach hurt.
As soon as my overpaid agents' provocateurs are all in position, I want all 7 marches stopped outside Parliament before I let all hell break loose. Security might handle 1 mob, but not 7. And especially not 7 outraged, blood-crazed mobs, whipped into a frenzy by the carefully honed rhetoric of my people.
But there's no way they'll actually get inside the house. I mean, that building's got all kinds of anti-terrorist defences built into it from the bad old days.
And you can bet security's got them all up and running after that suicide bomber.
They're not supposed to get inside. They're supposed to riot. Cracked heads and men down and blood running in the gutters. The peacekeepers won't be able to contain it. Security will break and run. And dear Douglas will only have 1 option left open to him. And then he will play right into my hands. You must be patient, Brett. I know what I'm doing, and you'll get to play your part soon enough.
And I'll get to kill someone?
I promised you a shot at the Death Stalker, and you know I always keep my promises.
In the house, every single member of Parliament was present for once, packed shoulder to shoulder in their seats. All the alien representatives were there too, along with clones, Shub, and the Oversoul. Parliament's authority hadn't been challenged this blatantly in 100 years. They could hear the roar of the mob growing ever louder outside the house, a dark, disturbing, violent sound. And a lot of the MPs looked nervous, even the few who were only present as hollows. They were in unknown territory now. King Douglas sat scowling on his throne, Jessamine on his left, Lewis on his right. Jessamine looked calm and composed, even regal. Lewis was scowling even harder than Douglas, even though Anne was talking constantly in his ear, telling him to relax, damn it, he was spooking everyone. Armed security men lined the walls, looking twitchy and sweaty. A large viewscreen was floating in midair on the open floor of the house, so that the honorable members could watch the latest media reports of the converging marches. Anti-church and anti-Neumann demonstrators were turning up in large numbers now, drawn by the media coverage. The church militant had a lot of enemies from all kinds of political and philosophical positions. Security and peacekeepers now had the extra responsibility of trying to keep the two sides apart. Already there was a lot of angry shouting as both sides screamed insults and threats at each other. Stones and other missiles were flying from all directions. Some people had been hit and were sitting bleeding and dazed on the ground, but the medics couldn't get to them. Most of the medics were frankly too scared even to try. Where the two sides did occasionally manage to get at each other, fistfights and worse broke out immediately. The peacekeepers and the security forces were running scared. They hadn't a hope of controlling or even containing the situation anymore, and everyone knew it. They hadn't been trained in how to deal with mass civil insurrection. No one had ever thought it would be necessary. No one had drawn a weapon yet, but everyone knew it was only a matter of time now. Tell Markham rose from his seat.
Send the troops in. The peacekeepers are out of their depth. Someone's going to get hurt soon. Really hurt. Call out the army. Let them handle it. One look at trained professional fighting men and the mob will fall apart.
What if they don't?
I'm reluctant to have armed troops running loose in the city attacking civilians. The last thing we need is for this to escalate. Lewis is right. If the crowd see troops bearing down on them with weapons in their hands, they won't run. They'll go crazy. Intelligence says a lot of the marchers are armed, some of them with energy weapons. They were expecting trouble. I don't want blood and bodies in the street. That smacks too much of the bad old days, the kind of tactics Lionstone was famous for. We're supposed to be better than that. We need a way to defuse this situation before anyone gets seriously hurt.
Meera Puri, member for Malediction, interjected immediately.
Exactly. Troops haven't been allowed into the Parade of the Endless for over a century. Not even for parades. We mustn't let this mob panic us into taking measures we might regret later.
Roland Boswell, member for Hercules IV, couldn't hide the obvious fear in his eyes.
If those thugs break through the barriers and storm the house, we could all end up regretting that even more. They've got fire in their bellies and blood in their eyes. Let them even scent weakness and they'll take the house by force. And we could all end up hanging from ropes.
Gerlid Shang, member for Zenith, wore a perfect mask of confidence.
Hysteria doesn't suit you, Rowan. Take a few deep breaths and stick your head between your knees before I have someone do it for you. There's no need for panic. We're all perfectly safe in here. There's no way the protesters can get to us. The house has been on security red alert ever since the suicide bomber got in here, and all the old defenses have been reactivated. The house has its own blast-proof steel doors and interior force fields. We could stand off an army if we had to. Whatever happens out there, we're safe.
We still don't know how that bloody bomber got in! Maybe we should agree to meet someone from the church. A delegation.
We are not opening our doors to a mob. We can't give in to threats. We certainly can't afford to appear weak before them. Give the church militant an inch, and we'll never be free of them. And if we start making concessions to the church, where would it all end? They aren't the only extremists with demands. We have to set an example, show everyone that we can't be intimidated. We have to break up the mob and send the militants packing. And for that, we need the army.
The troops are in their barracks, outside the city limits. Even if the house gave the order, it would take time for them to assemble and get here in force. I doubt we'd see them in under an hour. And a lot can happen in an hour, especially if the mob found out armed troops were on their way to shut them down.
How would they find out?
Don't be naive. This demonstration didn't just happen. It was organized by people who aren't stupid enough to be down here themselves. Whoever they are, you can bet they'll be monitoring this situation very carefully. If we give the order, you can bet the militants will know almost as soon as the troops. And then the shit really will hit the fan.
There is an alternative.
Everyone in the house turned to look at Lewis.
Is there, by God? I, for one, would very much love to hear it.
The Paragons. You've got over 100 Paragons in the city right now, sitting around waiting for the royal wedding. Call them in. The mob will take one look at that many Paragons bearing down on them and comb right down. I mean, I would, wouldn't you?
You've got a point, Lewis.
Douglas looked out over the house.
The people respect the Paragons, always have. Certainly far more than they do the house security or even the peacekeepers. The Paragons have a reputation for solving problems by whatever means necessary. And the Paragons have always been the people's heroes. I bet even militants will break down and disperse rather than take up arms against their heroes. Lewis, do you know where most of the Paragons are right now?
Well, currently you'll find most of them in a bar called the Sangreal. It's not far from here. And they'll know where to find the others. If you want them, most could be here inside of 10 minutes, and all of them inside 20. And they're probably not being watched like the troops, so the militants wouldn't know what was coming until the Paragons were right on top of them. After that, it should all get very calm in a hurry.
And we won't need the troops after all. Nice one, Lewis. Good thinking. How say you, honorable members? Shall we call in the Paragons?
The sense of relief in the air was so thick, you could almost smell it. The king called the Sangreal personally. Most of the Paragons had been watching the news coverage too and grasped the situation immediately. They grabbed their weapons, pulled on their armor, and charged out into the early evening air, glad of a bit of excitement at last. A lot of them had been drinking and carousing for some time, but none of them bothered to stop for purges. They weren't expecting any real trouble. Not from a bunch of civilians. They spread the word on the Paragon comm channel, and soon they were all heading for Parliament, picking up stragglers along the way, storming down the streets on foot and on gravity sleds, their purple cloaks flapping bravely in the rising wind. The outer reaches of the mob spotted the approaching Paragons, and word spread quickly through the protesters. The Paragons marched down the street in unison, the greatest gathering of heroes the city had ever seen, with a handful of gravity sleds flying overhead. They advanced confidently on the silently waiting demonstrators, and only slowed to a halt a few yards short as they took in the mood of the situation. It wasn't what they'd expected. The civilians didn't look scared or cowed by the presence of so many paragons as they should have been. They were just waiting to see what would happen. The paragons looked at each other uncertainly, until finally Veronica May Savage pushed her way to the front. They recognized Veronica May. They knew her reputation. She stood before them, her hands on her weapons belt, her head held high, Tam O'Shanter perched at its usual bold angle.
All right, people! This has gone far enough! Time to break it up and go home before someone gets hurt! If anyone has a genuine grievance, I guarantee on behalf of the Paragons that we will see you get a fair hearing. But this isn't the way, and you know it! So choose a street and start walking, or there'll be trouble. You don't want there to be trouble, do you?
The disruptor beam came from somewhere deep inside the crowd and blew her head right off her shoulders. The Paragons drew their weapons. They surged forward and slammed into the crowd, determined to reach whoever had fired the shot. Some of the militants fought back, and suddenly it seemed everyone was firing energy guns, and people were falling dead and injured to the ground. The crowd had become a mob, hysterical with fear and rage, and the Paragons only had thoughts of avenging their fallen. And as quickly as that, it all went to hell. In the house, the king and the MPs watched with horror as the mob turned on their supposedly beloved heroes, attacking the Paragons with everything from clubs to disruptors. The Paragons were fighting well and fiercely, tearing a bloody path through the mob, but they were vastly outnumbered. Already there were dead Paragons lying on the ground, their bodies being kicked and trampled underfoot. Douglas recognized some of their faces.
Oh, Jesus. What have I done?
It wasn't your fault. You couldn't have known. No one could have known.
Animals. They're just animals.
Call the barracks, Douglas. Get the troops in here.
Douglas looked at him, dazed, almost distracted.
What? Lewis, why are they doing this? We always protected them.
Call the army. Shut this down before it spreads.
Just a minute. We haven't agreed to calling in the troops yet. We don't want to make things worse.
Michel Dubois rose.
Madame Puri is right. We have to debate this. Are we really going to order troops to open fire on civilians, as in Lionstone's day?
In case you're not paying attention, Paragons are being butchered out there. They're not civilians anymore. They're terrorists. No better than elves. We're past the time for debate. Get the troops here fast, or we'll be watching a massacre.
All the MPs tried to speak at once, shaken and disturbed by what they'd seen. Everyone had their own ideas on what needed to be done. And since no one would back down for anyone else, soon they were all shouting at each other, calling for everything from conciliation to execution without trial. There was panic in their voices. If the people could turn so viciously on their adored paragons, no one was safe anymore. The politicians argued, the house became a bedlam, and on the view screen, people went on dying. Some were paragons. The church militants had tasted blood and found it to their liking.
The hell with this! I'm going out there!
Lewis, no! You can't!
She's right. You wouldn't make any difference out there. You're my champion. I need you here.
To do what? Hold your hand?
Those are my friends dying out there. They used to be your friends, too. I'm not doing anything useful here, and I can't just stand by and watch this happen.
Of course you can't. I'll get the army here as soon as I can. Try and buy us some time, Lewis. Go. Go on, go!
Tel Markham saw Lewis heading for the exit and ran out onto the floor of the house.
Stop that man! On behalf of the house and my fellow members, I demand that the champion not be allowed to involve himself personally in this mess. We can't let him commit us to a position. I demand that he stay here to protect us in case the unthinkable happens and some terrorist breaks through our defenses.
And then he broke off as he saw the look on Lewis's face and saw the disruptor in the champion's hand. The MP was a moment away from death, and he knew it. He swallowed sickly and was quiet. Lewis nodded once and strode out of the chamber with cold murder in his eyes. Markham swallowed again and looked at the king, staring after his departed friend.
Your Majesty, I must protest.
Oh, shut up. If I wasn't king, I'd be going out there with him.
Don't you dare! I forbid it! Douglas, you just give the rioters a target, a focus. They'd tear you apart on sight. Even worse, they might take you as a hostage, and God knows what commitments we'd have to make to get you back safely.
Douglas shook his head, but stayed where he was. Jessamine put a hand on his arm, but he didn't even glance at her. All his attention fixed on the terrible things still happening on the view screen. He watched as men and women howled like maddened animals, and blood flowed thickly in the gutters of the Empire's perfect city. While all around him, the MPs shouted and argued, and wouldn't listen to each other. Afterwards, everyone agreed that this was the day the Golden Age died. It wasn't until much later, after so much more had happened, that they discovered it didn't just die, it was murdered.